Welcome to the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zachary Elwood. This is a podcast about better understanding other people and better understanding ourselves. You can learn more about it at behavior-podcast.com. On this episode, I talked to Calvin Wayman about his experience leaving the fundamentalist Mormon cult that he was raised in. Calvin had four mothers and 44 siblings, and when he left the church at around 30 years old, he was essentially banished from the world he had known. I wanted to ask Calvin about the anxiety involved in questioning his beliefs and the accompanying fears of social isolation. I think isolation and fears of being isolated are key drivers of human behavior and can help explain so much of the extremes of human behavior. So I wanted to ask Calvin some details about that part of his experience. What was it like to think about leaving everything that had previously given his life meaning? Along the way, we talk about some specific beliefs of the religion that Calvin was raised in. We talk about what factors he thinks contributed to making him someone who'd leave such an environment when others might remain, even if they had similar doubts. We talk about the matrix and people's willingness to take the so-called red pill. We talk about how his family and community responded to him saying he was leaving. We talk about how the hard part often is not being in a cult, but leaving the cult. And we talk about how us humans seem to have a big need for certainty and why that is. A previous episode that I see is very much related to this one is a talk I had with Stephen Heine about the meaning maintenance model, which is about how we react when our sense of meaning is threatened. So if you like this talk, you might enjoy that previous one. And I have quite a few other episodes about psychology and mental health in the library. A little more about Calvin in his own words. Calvin is an author, speaker, and entrepreneur. When he left his fundamentalist Mormon family and community 5 years ago, he left everything he ever knew in pursuit of living a life that felt true to him, versus the life he was taught that he should live. Today, Calvin describes his core mission as wanting to empower others to think for themselves and make a life that is their own. He's the author of the book Fish Out of Water, which has the subtitle, The Guide to Achieving Breakthrough and Permanently Transforming into the New You. If you're hearing this, you're listening to the free version of this podcast. If you've enjoyed this podcast and what I'm trying to do with it, would you be willing to show your support by signing up for a paid premium subscription? It's only $5 per month, and you get a few benefits, like ad-free episodes and details about upcoming interviews I'm doing, and the chance to collaborate on episodes and submit questions to ask. But most importantly, you'd be helping me make the podcast better, encouraging me to spend more time on it, and helping me promote it. To learn more about benefits of the premium membership, go to my website, behavior-podcast.com. Okay, here's the talk with Calvin Wayman. Hi, Calvin. Thanks for coming on the show.
Zach, super happy to be here.
Yes, maybe we can start with, you know, this is probably a pretty big subjective question, but when you say you were in a cult, how do you personally distinguish between, you know, a cult and a religion?
This has been such a evolving question in my mind, because for the longest time when I was in it, and even a short time after leaving, I didn't call it a cult. To me, there's a few factors, but one of the biggest ones is it's so high stakes for being in and high stakes for leaving. Like it's us versus them in a very extremified way. Like there's this incredible fear of like leaving it, let alone the centralized authority within it. Usually it's an individual figure, but it could also be, like in my case, like a council of figures. And just not having that autonomy of moving, not just within it, but the idea of leaving it is incredibly fearful. Like you could, you know, in my case, go to hell, be damned, just feeling like your soul is threatened. I don't think there's like, I mean, I know there's like the bite model, how you might need what you know is a cult and stuff like that. But to me, it's not black and white. Cult-like behaviors on a spectrum. I mean, I see it other places in society that aren't exactly a cult. There certainly are some religions that have cult-like elements. There can be yoga classes that feel culty. But yeah, I think this whole like, it's us versus everyone else. But if you leave, you're like shunned, or you're very afraid of being an autonomous person, moving around it or leaving it. That's what, to me, makes it feel like an actual cult.
Kind of the all-encompassing nature of the of the requirements of being in the group, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So would you care to give some details about the group's beliefs?
Yeah. So I grew up fundamentalist Mormon. Some people who are probably listening to this would have heard of Mormonism. Fundamentalist Mormonism came out of the LDS Church when the LDS Church started changing some doctrine around, especially polygamy. So earlier history in the Mormon Church, you know, Joseph Smith, the founder, was a polygamist. Brigham Young was a polygamist, but then the federal government started to really pressure the church to do away with it. And there were church properties that were being seized. And it was around the time that Utah was trying to become a state to be part of the union and stuff like that. And finally, the LDS Church acquiesced and gave up plural marriage or polygamy, which was at the time taught as like a very sacred practice that was like a commandment from God as the one way to live. That's why there were prophets or leaders in the Bible, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, or whatever, that like had multiple wives and concubines, because God was like, this is the way to live. So when the LDS Church changed, that's where fundamentalism was born. And so the most infamous belief is that, the belief in polygamy. Of course, there's other ones that evolved or devolved over time, depending on how you look at it. Like, you know, this absolute power and authority in the leaders in the church, because they're like, it's taught that they have this thing called the priesthood, which is the authority to act and speak for God on earth. And you can kind of imagine how that can devolve into things, or how power can...
Major power.
Yes, incredibly so. But yeah, there's a lot of different pathways we could take as far as like beliefs. As silly as, you know, I grew up never swimming, because for some reason in fundamentalist Mormonism, the devil controlled water. So I taught myself how to swim about 3 years ago when I left. I left more than 3 years ago, about 5 years now, but taught myself to swim because that was a thing. You know, we had these things called the garments. Cover your body completely. Don't let the world see the garments. So couldn't wear short sleeves or shorts.
That's something even non-fundamentalist Mormons have.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. They believe in the garments. We kept ours like, I guess, more original, because they changed it to be shorter, to be easier for clothes to cover them. Ours were like super long. Of course, super traditional beliefs around men and women. Women in my church should only wear dresses, never wearing pants. My family never celebrated almost all holidays. There was a few we could do, like Independence Day or Thanksgiving, but no Christmas. I grew up with no Christmas, very little birthday celebration. Mm-hmm. Very much into not having any sort of like worldly view. You know, I was homeschooled, so wasn't around the public almost my entire life, my first part of my life, until I went to college, which that's kind of a turn into the story. But we were taught that, you know, the outside world was evil and that sort of stuff. So yeah, we're just very kind of shut off from the outside world. And then, of course, there's other beliefs around like race and that sort of thing that we think are completely gone and went away. And of course, we hear like echoes of the past around racism and stuff like that. But in my church, it was like very clear, actively, unapologetically racist.
Right. In the Mormon Bible, they have something about beliefs and about black people being a different kind of people and being cursed or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Where it comes from is there's this old story of the pre-existence, where there was this, before we were born, two people in heaven presented a plan for God, Lucifer and Jesus. And Lucifer said, yeah, I'm going to, like, the plan is like, let's give the spirits a body, and like, they'll do, they can do no wrong, and they can return back into your presence. And Jesus's plan was like, people can sin, but I'll die for their sins. And the honor goes to you, God. And the devil's like, the honor goes to me. And of course, God chooses Jesus's plan. And so the devil, like Lucifer, revolts and creates this strange war in heaven, and God has to kick out Lucifer and one third of the hosts of heaven. This is the story as it's told. And so that's what created hell, is one third of spirits that were on Lucifer's side. The rest of us, you and I, were on Jesus's side. That's why we're even born to this day. But here's where the story gets crazy. One third was cast out with Lucifer. One third are people like you and I. Like, the fact that we're born here on this earth shows us that we chose his plan and fought for him. But there was one third that couldn't decide whose side to pick. Couldn't decide Lucifer's or Jesus's. And guess who that one third was? African Americans. That's what we were taught. Mm-hmm. And so we were taught that, like, God was gracious enough to give them a life and a body, because that's why we're here, is to have a body and to choose good over evil and, like, evolve and to hopefully evolve far enough that we could ourselves become a God, which is another belief of Mormonism.
Right. But you get your own planet or something, right?
You get your own planet. That's a common one. But really what it is, the reason you get your own planet is because you become a God of universes. And some people think of it as like a planet. But it could, like, the way I was taught is like a whole universe, multiple planets. Like, there was a council of gods that created the universe, and there's other gods and other universes and stuff like that. And if you keep on choosing good, then you'll keep on moving along.
The multiverse must really fit into the Mormon. They have no problem.
Totally,
with that.
Yeah. But yeah, just to wrap up it was taught that God was gracious enough to give black people bodies, but they should be like, it's divinely written that they should be like second in line or subservient to everyone else, which of course is it's horseshit.
So how common was it for someone in your group to leave? And I guess I should start with how big was the community we're talking about? It was a pretty large community, right?
So fundamentalist Mormonism as a movement is pretty large. Based on some estimates, it could be 40,000 to 60,000 people, something like that, which, I mean, fairly large. Like, but there are different factions of it, because so many people in fundamentalism are obsessed over who's in charge and who has power, because they're it came out of, like, we're the true church, not the LDS church. And
right.
So that
I true who has the true truth. Yeah.
Yes. And who actually has the priesthood authority. And then throughout the last 100 years or so, there have been many different breakoffs within fundamentalism, because it's like, oh no, we're the ones that's truly keeping it on. So the one that's most infamous that people will know is Warren Jeffs FLDS. So Warren Jeffs is in jail for life, marrying child brides and that sort of stuff. My church and his church was once the same church in my dad's generation. And then there was a split off. And that split off created mine, known as the work of Jesus Christ. And my church had about 2,000 members, so relatively small. Warren Jeffs, I think, to this day is estimated around 10,000 for just his. But yeah, then there's like, there's spread out of different fundamentalist churches that have the pretty much identical beliefs in terms of polygamy, in terms of what's known as the plan of salvation, why we're here, where we're going, some of the beliefs I've already mentioned today. Yeah, and the only difference is, well, who gets to have the say? And every single one of them, the one thing that's in common is they all have this belief that we're the one true church, you know? Mm-hmm.
You said you went to college. So was it common for people to go out into the world and for them to let you go? So it sounds like they weren't super restrictive in that way. Is that correct?
So I have 44 siblings, and still to this day, I'm the only one of us that has gone to college.
Were they upset that you went?
So to directly answer your question, it was not common. I had to convince my dad and my grandfather, who was one of the church council members, to let me go. So I was one of this, I was this curious kid, always wanting to, like, learn truth and knowledge. And I had completed high school with a home program. I had my high school diploma, had worked in my dad's construction company for a couple of years. hated construction, wanted to do something else. So yeah, I basically had to, like, I first talked to my dad. It's like, I want to go to college. He was not into the idea at all because, of course, that's why I was homeschooled, because he didn't want me out in the outside world to be tainted. And with me being older, he was a little bit more warm to the idea. And he was like, well, what do you want to go for? And I said, well, I want to go for business. And so what he did is he was like, go talk to your grandfather. And if he's okay with it, then I think I'm okay with it. And so I went to him.
Yeah, they can't be too surprised that you left, I'd imagine, because going to the decision to go to college, probably they knew, well, we're on the path to losing him, right? Would you agree with that?
I don't think so.
No?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at the time. Mm. Because in the meeting with my grandfather, there had been some people in the community that have gone to college to be a nurse, let's say. Mm. When I was talking to him, I said, I want to go to college. He was just sitting there and was like, well, what do you want to go to college for? And I says, I want to learn business. And he sat in his chair for a second and was like, you know what? I think that's probably a good idea, because there's some of us in the community, like there's so many of us that are in construction. Again, my dad had a construction company. There's plumbers, there's electricians, but there's no one that has a business degree. Mm-hmm. It might be a really good idea for us to diversify a little bit and for somebody to understand business. And so he gave me his blessing and said, go. But then he gave me some, conditions or strict recommendations, I'd say. Mm-hmm. He said, so go to college, but here's what I'll say. Don't live on campus. Live at your dad's house, go to classes, go home, go to classes, go home. Mm. Don't make friends. Don't hang out after school. Definitely don't go to parties. Don't do any, in his words, extracurriculars. Go there, get education, and leave. Mm-hmm. If you do anything outside of these recommendations, then you're going to be on the devil's ground. And then the devil can handle you. But if you do what I say and go to classes and go home, then you'll be protected. And you can't fall away. So most definitely they were concerned. And that's one of the reasons they were like careful when I was getting the blessing to go. But then with those conditions, like, yeah, I don't think they were like planning on
leaving. They're pretty confident, because it sounds like they have a pretty high retention rate in business speak terms.
Yeah, so
exactly. Not many people are leaving.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people leave here and there, but it's... Mm. I mean, that's another thing too, but depending on how fast we want to forward in the story, but people leave and fall away here and there. I was one of the first ones to leave quite publicly and like post that I'm like, hey, I'm out.
Yeah, let's pause it there and I'll ask you, you know, at that point in your time when you were going off to college, were you still pretty much a true believer, or in your mind were you?
Oh yeah.
You were, yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was in it, man. Like hook, line, and sinker. I wanted to go, not because I was doubting it. I just wanted to keep learning. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very curious, and there was this quote from Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism. He said, man is saved no faster than he gains knowledge. And it was just a quote that was always said in my upbringing. And I was like, that makes so much sense. Like, you want to keep on growing and learning. And so there's like a belief in like continuing to advance and to learn. And so I was like, I want to keep on learning. You know, I don't mm-hmm. want to stop. And so, yeah, I was going there just to keep that going.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you left to go to college, how long after that did you start to question things, and what was that decision-making process like? If you could give I know that's a big question. Maybe you could give a summary.
It's a big question with a very simple answer. Within 1 week.
Mm.
So I'm going to school for business, right? But to get any degree, you have to take general education. And so one of the classes I took, I can't remember if this was a requirement or if I just needed at least the credits for this. But long story short, in my first semester, I had to take a philosophy class. And that is where, oh man, it is not, if you want to
wreck. 1 week of philosophy.
One day, one class. So one class, it's one single class. So this class... first of all, the whole semester was themed off of The Matrix in this class, which was fantastic. I had not heard of the movie The Matrix before, but it was so cool. And my professor taught it, the class, that The Matrix was actually based on a really old ancient idea from Plato's time, Plato and Socrates, known as Plato's Allegory of the Cave. but it was that story of Plato's cave that created an internal war within myself that started the entire thing. I call that day, that class, the crack. It was the crack that started internally that started to really, yeah, change everything.
A quick note about Plato's allegory of the cave and what that is. In that allegory, some people are living in a cave chained to a wall. The people watch shadows projected on the wall from objects passing in front of a fire behind them. The shadows are the prisoner's entire reality and where they find all their meaning. Someone escapes from the cave and sees the outside world, the real world, and realizes that their entire existence has been a lie based on meaningless shadows. They go back into the cave to tell the people about this, that they need to leave the cave to see the real world. But the people don't want to hear such things and they get angry. Plato theorized that in such a situation, the cave people would try to kill that man for threatening their meaning. Okay, back to the talk.
It sounds like it was very much an internal process. Were you talking to people?
Oh, yeah.
At that point outside of the group?
No, not about this. Okay. No. Like, yeah, because all through college, I don't think I told maybe one person that where I came from, maybe, like, but nobody knew who I was, where I came from. I just, you know, went
there. So pretty much all your friends and family were within the group at that point.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Like at that point, like 99% of the people that I knew had the last name Wayman, the same name as my last name. It was friends, family, siblings, all that stuff, cousins.
So maybe we could talk a little bit about the fear of loneliness factor. I mean, I would think it would be pretty terrifying to leave the people you know and love, the surroundings, the whole conceptual experience.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk about that fear that must have been in your heart as soon as you started to question these ideas?
Yeah. Well, I feel like those things, fear of loneliness, first of all, there was intense fear, but there was intense actual loneliness. Because what happened in that philosophy class, long story short, is she told us the story of Plato's allegory of the cave. But at the end, she asks these questions like, who are you in the story? Like throughout most of my life, I thought of somebody as I wanted to pursue truth and knowledge. Of course, in Plato's story, one of the guys breaks loose from the chains and leaves the cave, shatters his whole reality, shatters his whole conception of what was real because he was chained in a cave his whole life with everyone else there. And that was their whole reality. They knew nothing else. And the one beautiful thing in their life is shadows appeared on the wall every day. And that was their ultimate reality. And she asked, can you say that you're the person that would be willing to leave the cave in pursuit of truth, the comfort of everything? Or how do you know?
The red pill.
Yes, the red pill. Or how do you know? There's the red pill and there's the blue pill. But then there's the pill that you think is red, but it's not. And this is something that's not talked about. Like, and it just really hit me because she was like, how do you know that you're not the one in the cave thinking you are red pilling or you are looking at absolute reality, but all you're doing is looking at shadows on the wall? That is like a projection from someone else. And it was the way she phrased it. I did this self-reflection, and for the first time in my life, I realized everything that I believed up to that point that mattered, like the most meaningful things about life, why I was there, the beliefs I held, every single one of them were from my dad, my grandfather, the other church leaders, the books that they told me to read. And I realized there was nothing that I had internally discovered outside of that parameter.
Yeah, you'd absorbed the world.
Yes. That's where the loneliness kicked in, majorly, because the possibility that I was in the cave scared me so much, it's hard to imagine. But not only did it scare me, who could I talk to about it now? Like, I wasn't talking to anybody in the outside world. I couldn't tell them.
Right.
Who could I talk about that was inside? The thought of telling somebody that you're questioning all of this is like that by
itself. Did you talk to anyone?
No one. No one. You like you can't. Like you to tell someone like I would probably ask questions in like indirect ways, but not no. Like it was a very like because if you're doubting and then it's like what are you like you're going to get shunned or maybe heaven forbid you're kicked out prematurely. And you're like, holy crap. And so, yeah, that's where the loneliness really, really kicked in. And what it just did that day is it put me in an intense study mode and curiosity mode because I had decided, you know what, if this is true, which I hoped it was. What I realized then is I had not discovered anything internally. And secretly, I still hoped everything that I knew was true.
And like maybe I can prove it. Yeah.
Exactly.
To myself.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, if it's true, truth exists independently of somebody's projection of it. So I can find it outside of this. So I'm going to study it and I hope to God that it points back to this. And of course, there the journey begins.
We know how that ended up.
Yes, yeah. We do.
I want to come back to the feelings of isolation, but
yeah.
I'm curious, do you think there were certain qualities that you had, certain experiences you had as a child that made you more likely to be someone who would question these things and be someone who left the group? You know, for example, were you an older sibling? Were you more of a leader in the community? Do you think you were smarter than average? Do you think you were better at being alone? Things like this, anything come to mind as to why you and not someone else, say?
That's something I've been trying to wrap my head around a little bit too, because I'm like, was it a certain combination of DNA? I was certainly more curious, I guess, than average. And honestly, I think what did it is being homeschooled, because the thing that homeschool did is it taught me to figure shit out on my own, but I was a particularly good at comparatively even to my siblings at school at home. Not because I was necessarily smarter, but I stuck to things a little bit longer because I wanted to learn and I wanted to gain truth. I particularly fell in love with math, and the reason I loved math is it didn't feel subjective, it felt absolute. But what I think that ended up doing is to fall in love with math and to like math, you got to learn logic in a somewhat precise way, because you can be somewhat logical, but if you skip things, then it's easy to get the wrong answer. I think my love for math gave me that crisper logic that I used all throughout my upbringing with different ways. Like there were some things that didn't make sense that I argued with, but still was able to maintain my foundation and identity within it. And that same reasoning and logic made me realize, you know what? You can fool yourself. You can be wrong. And I think that's such a huge awareness that you can be wrong about something, that you can fool your own mind. And that's what the tools of logic are good for, not just to come to a conclusion, but to check the things you're already believing and seeing if you're messing yourself up somewhere along the way. So I think, yeah, the curiosity, the autonomy.
Were you encouraged by, you know, for your parents' faults? Is it accurate to say that they maybe encouraged you a bit in your curiosity?
Not particularly.
It wasn't like you were known for like, hey, he's the curious one and let's encourage that. It was just that you just happened to be curious.
Yeah. But I also fell in love with computers early on. But I was kind of known for, yeah, Calvin's the one that loves computers and stuff like that. And it was somewhat known that, oh, Calvin loves math and that sort of stuff. But like I was never enrolled into any program or summer camp or anything. Like it just was. I was just that way. I just wanted to like learn how things work. I would open things like electronics and try to figure out why it's working.
Were you older than your other siblings? Or?
I was the 11th. Of the 45. Older kids.
Pretty high up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty high up there.
Upper percentile.
Yeah, anyway. Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, it's probably hard to know all the many factors that lead to these things.
It's so fascinating though. Like I wanted to sit down with like child psychologists or like a group of people and be like, can you kind of like study my brain a little bit in my life and help me understand myself a little bit better?
Well, I imagine so much of this, you know, so much of it's like these random pathways, you know, it's like we start being interested in something, you know, you start being interested in say computers or math, and you go down the rabbit hole of that world, you know, and one thing leads to another, cascading effects kind of, you know, thing.
Yeah, because I'm not the only sibling that has left. A lot of my siblings have left at this point, but there's a marked difference. Like,
did you open the floodgates in a way?
No, I can't say that. But my point is like some siblings have left, but it almost feels like they found, not all of them, but some of them have found other cult-like things. That like it's almost like they changed on. I feel like
replacement.
Yeah, like to me, because mine was such an internal deconstruction. It was why am I believing this? That's what it came to is like. Yes, I did study like history, and none of that made sense. But what I really came to is it was a very internal journey, a psychological one, of
existential,
like
existential. Yeah,
yeah, but existential for sure. But I got really curious of like, why do I feel afraid to leave? Why does anyone, like the competing fundamentalist churches, why do they believe it? And of course, when you're in my church, you're like, oh, they were deceived. And then I was like, I could then put myself in their shoes and they're like, wait, they think I'm deceived. Mm-hmm. And we were taught, well, we believe this because it's the true one. That's why we believe it. And so it made sense. But then I was like, wait, but they think it, they think they're the true one. And so I learn about like, you know, confirmation bias and the way we trick ourselves to believing something, and then tribalism and why leaving is so afraid, because I'm leaving my tribe. I'm leaving my camp. I'm getting shunned by those that I put on pedestals my whole life, like my dad and my grandfather. Like, they were the people that were in charge of my soul in a sense. Like I had to, there's this whole law of the one above another, or like you are accountable to someone above you. For me to get advancement in the church, I had to be recommended from my dad to the church leaders, so that it was so external. And so then to realize I'm going to leave and disappoint these people that I've been trying to impress my whole life so that I could advance, and realize, oh, I don't need that. It's so interesting to me. Like, the older I get, it's actually more interesting the more I'm out of it, just to see all the internal stuff at play.
All the foundation. You're crumbling your whole foundation, which is, I think people don't really, unless they've lived through something like that, it's really hard to comprehend how mind-shaking, you know, mind-blowing and terrifying that is, I think.
I 100% agree. And I think also that if you realize that it is an internal battle, I think it's easier for anybody on the outside to understand why anybody would stay or not leave. Because it's not just about the externalities of belief systems and that sort of thing. It's all this internal stuff, the emotional stuff that can, like, that is what is making anybody stay in anything. I mean, you see it all the time, like people, like even in politics and other religions and stuff like that, I start to identify with the group that you're in. Like, there's so many different dynamics. It's not just about, is this true or not true?
Yeah, I think, personally, I think fear of isolation is one of the, probably the most powerful psychological force in existential psychology. You know, they talk about the core existential fears, which is, you know, fear of death, fear of freedom, fear of meaninglessness, and fear of isolation. And fear of isolation, I think, doesn't get enough recognition in the sense that I think it helps account for so much stress and the seemingly weird and bizarre and desperate things that people do because they're so terrified of feeling alone and cut off from the world. So to go into my background for a moment, I've sometimes talked on this podcast about, you know, my so-called, you know, nervous breakdown in college when I dropped out of college mid-year because I just became increasingly unable to function socially, and I felt like I was losing my mind. And a big part of that was feeling isolated, feeling like I was basically becoming more and more distant from the world of people. And I felt like a distant planet floating millions of miles away from other people. And it became increasingly, you know, hard to even have a meaningful connection or feel that I could have a meaningful connection. And that, I say all that just to say, like, that's probably much more, you know, mentally unwell and extreme than what you experienced or what most people experience when it comes to these things. But I'm curious if some of those things were going on for you. Were there, like, you know, sleepless nights of feeling like you were going crazy and these kind of things? Could you talk a little bit about maybe some of that?
Where that really felt, where I really hit those things was when I actually left. Because at first there were fears of isolation, but then it was actual. Because living in a cult is one thing. And people always talk about, like, what was that like? What was your childhood like? That must have been challenging. The truth is, it really wasn't. My childhood wasn't that challenging. It wasn't that. It was coming to the awareness. The most traumatic thing was realizing what it was and then actually leaving it. That was the hard part, because that's where the isolation really came in. Because when I left, I wanted to own the decision. And so I was already becoming somewhat public with my life, just because I'd quit my day job and become an entrepreneur. And so I started posting on Facebook and Instagram, which, you know, at first the church wasn't, like, really into social media stuff, but I was a little bit of a rebel. I was like, I'm going to do social media stuff. But when I left, I posted about it and it created a shitstorm in my community. People that I thought I was friends with my whole life just shunned me, like, overnight.
You're the villain.
Yeah. It's hard to explain. I mean, yeah, sleepless nights, yes. Weeks of depression, yes. Suicidal thoughts, yes. And then on top of that, you make this gut-wrenching decision that you feel is the right decision, because obviously that's why I made it. And then you have all of this, not just existential angst, like this, you feel all this, like, pressure and, like, breaking all of your relationships, and it feels like the whole world is caving in on you. And so then you're questioning the decision altogether, which I had for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm like, no, like, I have to trust my gut in that I want to live my life that's not external, that's listening to somebody else. I want to follow my own gut and my own internal compass for the first time, even if that meant I was going to be damned. That's what I had to come to finally leave. I had to be okay with damnation if that meant I was going to be damned for following my own internal guiding system. And so the isolation and the loneliness was intense, way worse than I feared, surprisingly.
Am I understanding correctly that, you know, like we talked about, you couldn't tell them that you were no longer a believer and still maintain connections with them? You were basically, by definition, they would not want to talk to you. Is that assumed?
Yeah. And at the time, I was a little bit naive, because I kind of figured, like, I knew some people that have left, but I still thought, because different fundamentalist groups are more strict than others. The church that ours broke off of, Warren Jess Fundamentalist Church, like, theirs is probably the most strict. Like, if somebody leaves, like, I have friends that haven't talked to their mom in, like, 7 years because they left, and they're taught to, like, leave. Or they're to the point that if the dad leaves, then his family's taken from him and, like, assigned to another man. Like, or even if he's needing to repent, like, they will send him off to repent and his family can be reassigned. Like, that's the most extreme. Ours wasn't as extreme. And so I thought that I would still maintain those connections, but people took it very personally that I was, like, attacking the truth, attacking God, attacking Jesus. And so even though I wanted those connections, I couldn't keep them. And so I don't know if it was something that they were taught. I think they felt me as, like, an enemy. And the reason
it public.
Yes. Yeah. And that I wasn't in it. And so, but the other thing too, even if I wanted to connect to them, like, I tried to a little bit, like, I didn't feel seen or heard. So you can't, even if you're around people, like, you're, the connection's not there. And so that breeds isolation too. Cause I would still, like, I went to a couple parties or saw people and stuff like that, but the connection's gone. Like, there's nothing there to
The wall is up.
You know,
yeah.
Yep, the wall's up. We're on completely different planets.
Let me ask you about the making it public part, because I can imagine, you know, that you talking about it publicly, I could see as, you know, you basically like a desperate attempt to make other connections and be like, hey, the world out there, I want to make connections with you. And instead of, you know, I'm questioning my meaning over here, so I want to reach out to this other world and start making my connections. Was there part of that psychologically for talking about it publicly?
At the time, I was doing basically a vlog. It wasn't that. I was documenting my life as like an entrepreneur. This was like another episode of like, okay, one of the biggest things of this year is I left my religion. And I know I'm now going to have friends and family that see this, and this is going to be a big shock to you. But I want you to know where I'm coming from. Like, I love everything that I come from. I was very, in my view, kind and gentle. I did not bash the religion. It was very of like...
Measured, yeah.
Now, some people might be asked, what, are you going to throw it all away? Do you think it's all not true? And I'm like, what it feels like to me is I feel like a boy in his mid-20s that is leaving his parents' house for the first time. That's what it felt like.
And how old were you?
30. And I was like, when you leave your parents' house, does that mean that you hate your parents? Not necessarily. You're grateful for what they've given you. It just feels like it's time to keep growing and move on. And that's how I framed it. And so I framed it like, here's the biggest thing in my life, in my entrepreneurial journey, essentially. I left and it was the scariest decision of my life, but it's my life now. And here's to making the most of it. And so that's what it was. And so I think it surprised me that I got so much backlash from the community at the time. But it makes sense now because people just felt threatened by it. If you tie it back to the Plato story, the guy comes back and tells them that there's like this whole other world, and somebody's like, what could be better than our shadows? And it's like, don't you understand? These shadows are nothing compared to what's out there. And then they want to kill him. Yeah, because their world is being like threatened. And it still happens here and there, like every so often. I have way more love than I have hate, but every so often somebody will see me with a piece of content, hearing something like this, or seeing me do comedy, and I'll get a comment from the community that's like, scriptures talks about, you know, selling your soul. Here it is in full display, like used as like an example.
Oh boy. Do you know people, or do you have a sense that you, maybe that you know people in that world who had similar questioning and internal questioning of the beliefs, but decided to stay, you know, because they couldn't face all of that, the accompanying anxiety and doubt.
You want to know what's interesting? The timing of this is interesting because I just got an anonymous phone call yesterday. The guy didn't want to tell me his name, didn't even want to tell me which fundamentalist church he's in. Could be in mine for all I know. Could be in Warren's, could be in another one known as The Order, could be a different one. And he saw me on a podcast. How I was describing it was his exact experience. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm starting to question things, but he's the only one in his family that's questioning. And he's afraid to tell anyone, but he just had to talk to somebody that had made that was out. And he saw that I have a life and is like, is it okay out there, kind of? Mm. And in the conversation, though, this is why I'm bringing it up, that conversation ends, he doesn't know yet if he's going to leave. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know if he feels like if he can stomach it, if he can. The disappointment, he said he knows that his dad would rather he died than leave. Mm-hmm. And
it's a lot of stress.
Yeah. So that to your point, like, I mean, fingers crossed, like, there's the one thing. Having gone through the process, I sure as fuck didn't pressure him and tell him that he should. Mm-hmm. It has to be step by step. Right. Because
organic.
Yeah, it has to be organic. And I think that's what people don't realize is the psychological potential trauma of your entire worldview crumbling and crashing and your entire social circle that you've known your whole life. It has to be respected. And I have such a different view on the ethics of truth because, yes, there's something that you might be true, but somebody has to truly be in a place that they can get something, because for you, it might just be, oh, that's just the truth, but you're safe. There are some people that it's not just the truth. It's not safe. Mm-hmm. It's very real world consequences for considering something else. So we'll see how that plays out.
When you talked to your dad and others in the family about leaving, did they emphasize to you, you know, did they use the loneliness factor as kind of a weapon to scare you with? Was that something they emphasized?
So all my upbringing, it was like, it's talked about, if you ever leave, you're going to have that. You're going to have the fear of, mm-hmm. Of loneliness and being like, it's going to feel like hell. Like that's what hell is really. Hell is like a deep sense of isolation. And then there's this,
which I believe is true. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And then there's this extra special place in hell for, called outer darkness or for sons of perdition. And it's for people that it's like the most tormentous kind. And so you had all that growing up, but by the time I left, when I told my dad, that was like the ripping the Band-Aid off that I was leaving the work, as it's called. And the main thing he just did is got really sad and like asked me why, and then tried to convince me by giving me some books to read.
What kind of books?
Scriptures within that's basically the canon of fundamentalist scripture. There's like of course, there's Doctrine and Covenants in the Book of Mormon, but then there's some other scriptures from early prophets, like John Taylor and Wilford Woodruff, and there's like these prophecies they make. And in those prophecies, it probably speaks to what you were saying, where fear of, you know, damnation of your soul. Because that's what it's so hard to emphasize, is you're taught that, yes, not only are you going to lose your connection to the truth or to your family, there's this whole other thing that you're like risking your very soul for eternity. Like life is, we're taught that life is such a blip in our existence that, yeah, if you do this one life right, face whatever sacrifices that the church gives you because you do it well and you bear your cross, then you're going to have an eternity that's amazing and you're going to keep progressing and be a God someday. That's really amazing, right?
Big stakes.
And if you leave it, why would you give up something so minuscule for what? For a party, to have sex, like for all of eternity? Like, and your soul's going to be damned if you do these things anyway? Like, is that worth it?
What are you, an idiot?
Yeah. Are you stupid? And so that's what it, like, you have to actually deal with and wrestle with those. Like, am I willing to risk everything? Bet all of eternity.
More than everything.
Yeah. All of eternity yeah. of my soul to make this choice to leave. And so, yeah. So, of course, my dad, as a good dad would want to save his son. So he gave me some stuff to save me. And of course, that put a kink in our relationship for a while. But the silver lining, especially with my immediate family, is I'm on good terms with them now. I'm not on good terms with, I'm not on good terms necessarily with people in the community, especially these days, because if I notice something radical, I'm open to talk about it. Like my church leader is quite fiery, the main one, John Timpson. Like he'll use fear tactics. Like in church, there's this church where he's basically yelling at people, because my church leaders yell and swear and stuff over the pulpit. But basically, if you even sit in the presence of someone that is speaking against this authority, you know, God's true priesthood, you're risking your very soul, you know, like scaring people, even having friends in or outside of the church that might dare say that we're not God's amazing anointed humans, you know.
They're putting the pressure on.
Yeah, putting the pressure on. So I'm willing to speak out against that. So I don't think I'm going to have good graces with people in the community at large. But my immediate family, like the siblings I grew up with, like we're good now. I have the best relationship with my dad that I've ever had in my life, really, just because it's based on honesty. Tragedy can kind of, you know, bring out some good things. And the, my dad, after we had a huge falling out and like a fight a year or so after I left, just didn't see eye to eye. This past year, he got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. The thing that did open up is like, you know what, time is limited. Our whole past and arguments just didn't matter anymore. And so then we got on like worked out stuff. He essentially showed regret for other things that he's done in his life to me and others and stuff like that, like basically apologizing, which is something that I never thought I'd hear. And so, yeah, I feel really lucky that way. Closer to some siblings than others, you can't be close to 44, but I can talk to any one of them. We have like a sibling group chat that virtually all of us are in. And then there's like, I'm really close to like 3 or 4 of my siblings of the 44. So
yeah. I'm curious, are you currently religious or spiritual in any specific by the book way, or do you have a sense of spirituality if you don't have a specific religion?
Good question. I joke that I joined a new religion, that there is currently one member, and I don't think that there are going to be any proselytizing or conversions happening soon. Basically, the religion of Calvin Wayman. So I definitely, in a strange way, I feel more spiritual, like whatever that is. Like there's so much loaded stuff around what that means. And is that connection to a higher power and stuff like that. But I'm still open to doubting if there is that. I think I call myself agnostic, but I've had some pretty intense experiences that felt really spiritual, if you will. Like, when I left the religion 2 weeks later, I was in Costa Rica on a 7-day ayahuasca retreat, you know, because I wanted to kind of reset. And that was amazing. That's what kind of reset me to like a core part of me is curiosity and to keep that. But yeah, I'm open, but I'm very much non-dogmatic. I feel like I'm allergic to dogma in all of its forms.
That seems to be what your experiences made you question everything, which I think, I think a lot of people think that skepticism and a sense of, you know, the world being mysterious and spiritual can't coexist. But I'm with you because I'm skeptical of everything. I call myself an agnostic because I don't even like the word atheist. Sounds too certain to me. So I'm just,
it feels too dogmatic.
Yeah. It's like, I like the world is so mysterious and wild to me, like almost nothing you could show me about the truth of it would probably surprise me. So I think we're probably on the same page there.
Totally. And the thing I was trying to say earlier is like the gift in all of this wasn't just the externalities of this is what my church believed and it doesn't believe that. Like coming to this understanding of thinking, the thinking that keeps people in, I notice it in other things that might not even be a cult. That's like, oh, this kind of thinking can make you locked into this other dogmatic thing. I'm very conscious of the kind of thinking I'm having and why I would lock myself into something else. Like, anyway, I probably need to think about this more just to even articulate what I'm trying to say. But
no,
the thinking
makes complete sense. Yeah, you remain skeptical even of your own because you know how those narratives can go astray. So you question,
like people,
anytime you find yourself going down those paths, you question it.
Yeah, or somebody's speaking to me and saying and talking about something that to them is like so true and so dogmatic, and I say, I see what you're saying, but look at the thinking that's required to believe that. And if I had that thinking to believe this, then I honestly would still be in my religion because this thinking is required to believe something, what you're saying, because you're basing it on just that this tradition or what somebody
trusting.
Said. Yeah, that no wonder people are in this. So like I'm always like checking those types of the way my thinking is around anything that comes across my awareness, especially if something sounds completely absolute, like alarm bells go off in my head when somebody's like, oh, this is completely true no matter what,
right?
You know?
Well, I think it's to me a sure sign of someone who's being unreasonable is someone who is act certain about something you can't possibly be certain about. And like you say, you can, once you start looking for that, you see that all around us where someone's like, oh yeah, this is going to happen in the future. Cryptocurrency is going to be the next thing. This is going to be,
totally.
You know, it's like, I can understand believing a likelihood of various things, but when someone is like, no, this is the way it is, I'm like, you might want to, like you said, is like, maybe you should question that thought process that led you to that.
Exactly. Oh man, that could be a whole other conversation, because I remember going to like Bitcoin Maximus like meetings and people saying this and this, and I'm like, yeah, it feels so familiar. And honestly, yeah, that's what I love. Yeah. I genuinely, like, I fucking hated my life for a long time after leaving, and I felt gypped by if there was a higher power or the universe. I'm like, why was I in something so ridiculous? Couldn't I just had a normal life that parents like fostered my curiosity? Maybe I'd be a little happier and more curious. But the thing I do love is I genuinely love this like lens that I see the world now and look and see the dogma in so many corners of the world, and also see the destructive nature of absolutism that is just not going to help us move forward in so many ways.
I often think that, you know, I've often said and think that certainty, our desire to be certain about things, no matter what it is really humanity's biggest weakness. It's like, we're so pressured to be certain because it helps us fight off the existential meaninglessness and fear, so that we, you know, we have these pressures to be certain about whatever it is, just so we can feel like there's some meaning there present that we can cling to. And I think that really is what so much of our problems boil down to, is that desperation for certainty.
And you can't grow if you're like so certain on something. A quote that it helps me all the time is like, you know, a mind full of conclusion has no room for expansion. Doesn't mean you have to be so open-minded, as they say, as the quote says, that your brains fall out, but be open-minded enough that you're probably wrong, because we all are on something. Be open enough that you can expand something. You don't just like full stop everything. Don't just say, oh, this is the way it is no matter what.
This has been great, Calvin. Thanks so much for talking openly about all these things. And do you have anything you want to mention that you're working on these days?
Yeah. I'm launching a podcast. The exact date is TBD, but it's called Cultured. I don't know if you noticed the play on the word there, but cultured. So
cult.
Yeah, cultured. Emphasis on that word. But it's going to be a podcast really about, of course, my life living in a cult, or culture at large, or becoming cultured, like trying different things in different cultures, learning from different kinds of people. Because the whole other part of this conversation is that we haven't talked about is there also is beautiful truths, I think, in humans. If you see the traditions that have carried on, and if you can look at those and see why they hold on, like what's the kernel of beauty underneath it? And so I'm into that also. So yeah, you can learn more about that and also get on the list to being notified when it actually launches. If you go to culturedpod.com, so culturedpod.com, more information on that, and can be notified when it goes live.
Great. This has been great. Thanks, Calvin.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Calvin Wayman. You can find him on Twitter at Cal Wayman. That's C-A-L and Wayman, W-A-Y-M-A-N. This has been the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zach Elwood. You can learn more about it at behavior-podcast.com. If you like this episode, I have a lot of episodes in the library about psychology and mental health that you might like. And just a reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast to get ad-free versions and collaborate on episodes. Thanks for listening. Music by Small Skies.